Welcome to the Anderson Business Advisors Podcast, the nationally recognized preferred provider for asset protection and tax planning in the nation. This show is for investors and business owners looking to save on taxes and build long-term wealth with Toby Mathis, an attorney, author, business owner, and a featured instructor at Anderson's Tax and Asset Protection event held throughout the country. Enjoy the show.
Hey guys, this is Toby Mathis and
Jeff Webb,
and this is Tax Tuesdays, bringing tax knowledge to the masses. So happy Tuesday to everybody. I hope you guys are having a great one out there and having some fun in the sun. It's only about 110 degrees here in Las Vegas. Today, well, we got a whole bunch of fun stuff. We put on a ton of questions, so we're going to have our work cut out for us today. Yep. So we got our work boots on, so we're going to dive right in. Number one, just as a reminder, you can always follow us on social media. In fact, please do like us on Facebook, pretty please, and register and subscribe to AndersonAdvisors.com YouTube, or just go to YouTube and type in Anderson Advisors. You should be able to find us, myself, my partner, Clint, Michael Bowman, and a bunch of the tax folks are constantly putting out content, and we love it to be used. So share it with your friends. Tax Tuesday rules. Send questions to TaxTuesday at AndersonAdvisors.com. That is where we are grabbing the questions that we make part of the events. We're always looking for good questions, and we're grabbing them. If you need a detailed response that's very specific to you, you will need to become a platinum or a tax client. So we need you to be actually a client if we're giving you specific advice. If you just ask general questions, just do it during Tax Tuesday or via the TaxTuesday at AndersonAdvisors.com, and we'll just get your response. This is fast, fun, and educational. We want to get back and help educate. Taxes is one of those areas where it's our biggest expense as an American, even more than housing and food and clothes combined. So if we can do something to help bring down some of the unneeded expense, taxes are overpaid to the tune of about $1 billion a year. We're not hurting the country by doing it. We're keeping it in your pocket. And frankly, it's better off for the country if you keep it, because you're able to use it to make money, especially if you're a good investor. All right, let's jump in. Opening questions. These are the questions we'll be answering today. I am 21, in college, work for my parents' corporation, so way to go. How can I maximize tax-wise strategies to help with retirement in college? Wow, I like that. Someone's smart, so we're going to go over that. How many stock option trades must one make in a year to be considered a professional trader by the IRS? Is TaxTurbo comparable to using a CPA? Well, it's TurboTax, and we'll answer that. How can I pay my daughter, who works for the corporation, a salary to help her buying her own rental property? We'll answer that. I'm currently in an employer contributing 401k, so you're in an employer plan. Can I still start a self-directed 401k to use for investing in real estate? Yeah, we'll talk about that. And does a leasing real estate subsidiary LLC pass through have to pay self-employment tax, or will its holding company pay the taxes? So that's going to beg a larger question, which we will get to as well. How can I set up bank accounts for LLCs and have funds flow to the holding corp? How do I report the income for tax purposes? And we will go over that with you. I am a subcontractor. Do I need a corporation to protect myself? So we'll go over that. I own rental property. As an individual, how can I deduct interest expense on this property? I know Jeff is going to want to dive all over that one for you. Can you explain the depreciation recapture for a property that was never depreciated? Oof, yes, we will. What is the best structure to protect against the IRS piercing the veil and establishing a lien on funds? We'll dive into that. I have a large amount of capital losses. Are there any creative ways to reclaim these losses faster than the $3,000 a year standard? So if you have some capital losses, we'll go over that. I'm currently buying properties in Arkansas with an LLC. Should I register as a foreign entity? Are there better incentives by doing so? So we'll go over that. And then I have a C corporation. Can I deduct long-term care premiums as an expense?
That's a lot of questions.
Well, we're not done yet. I told Susan in our marketing, I said, hey, I said, you call this the super massive Tax Tuesday just because we got so many questions. But don't worry, I'm going to talk fast. We'll make it go. All right. What's the rule for claiming meal and entertainment? Is it always 50%? So, for example, can I take my real estate broker to lunch? No. What you should do, let me just take this right out. And you're going to say attorney to lunch. Do I need to pay taxes for my new corp if I have not generated income yet? So we'll go over all those. So let's just dive right on in because we have a lot to go through, guys. And we are going to have to keep on task today because we have so many questions. It's always fun that way. All right. I am 21, in college, and work for my parents' corporation. How can I maximize tax-wise strategies to help with retirement in college? Wow. You're already doing it. You are a rock star in my world. So here's what you do. First off, if you have a corporation, you have a parents' corporation, they need to make sure they have an accountable plan, which means they reimburse anything that benefits the corporation. They reimburse those expenses. So that's number one. Make sure you're getting tax-free money. And the way it works is with an accountable plan, you pay nothing on the money you receive for things like your cell phone, your computer, anything you're using for that business. So internet, mileage, anything that you're doing that benefits the company can now reimburse you. So that's first off. Number two, if you're 21 in college and you're working, you would just file your own tax return. And the first $12,000 you receive is not subject to, it's called the standard deduction. It is not subject to any taxation. It is a standard deduction. It's tax-free for federal income tax purposes. Most states follow that. And the only thing you'd have to worry about is Social Security.
Right.
So if you're getting paid a salary, they're already taking that out. And that's the only thing you'd pay, which is old age, death and survivors and Medicare. That is a fantastic way to get money to pay for college. If somebody else paid for college for you, for example, if your parents paid for it, it's coming out of their tax bracket. So let's just say I just had my daughter go through college. She graduated last year. I'll let you guys know that. And I always said, hey, instead of me paying for your tuition, how about we set something up and you make money, even if it's from my company, like even if I'm paying it and you pay for your tuition, it saves thousands of dollars in taxes. It's massive. So just by saying that you work for your parents' corporation, that's the key. Then it's getting all the benefit out of it, letting the corporation pay you back for anything that you're using for that corporation. An administrative office, even if it's in your dorm, would still work as long as it's an area that you're using for the business exclusively. There are ways to get you money. Right. If you're not living in a dorm, but you're living at a house, it's even easier. If you have like a two-bedroom apartment and one of them is a bedroom is being dedicated to the business, that's even better. Then you can write off literally half of everything. But it's a lot of fun. Let's see. I'm looking at a lot of questions. Let's see if any of them pertain to this. Guys, I'm going to answer your questions today, but sometimes they're not relevant to this. So I'm looking at some statute of limitations and some things. All right. So let's say, how can I write off current college tuition expenses of my children through my existing LLC? So first off, an LLC is not a tax category. So a lot of you guys hear me say that. And what it means is an LLC, we got to figure out how that's taxed. So if it's taxed as an S corp or a C corp, then the way you do it is you reimburse them expenses and you pay them a salary if you have to. So it works out great. It's taxed as an S corp. Perfect. So you would Craig, you'd want to make sure you have an accountable plan. And then you want to make sure you're reimbursing them from everything from their cell phone to their computers, as long as it's being used in the business. And if you're going to pay them out of that company, pay them a salary. If you don't want to do withholding, there's a little workaround, which is to have one spouse, if there's two spouses. So I'm assuming that you're married, but if you're not, then you just have to go right to the salary or the wages. But yes, married. So if you're married, then what you do is you have your wife, for example, work as a contractor for the company, pay her as a sole proprietor. It sounds weird, but you're going to zero this thing out and then have her pay the kids. The trick is that they actually have to do work for the S corp. You know, so don't think this is just all freebie. They actually have to do something. So what you do is you have them do, sometimes it's marketing, sometimes with kids, it's really great to use them for social media because they actually understand it. And a lot of times we don't. And you literally just pay them. So for example, if you have two children, then they would each be able to do their own tax return and they would each be able to get $12,000 tax-free. And on top of that, you'd be able to get them their reimbursements for things like your cell phone and everything from the medical, dental, vision. Well, actually, with the S corp, we're going to have a little issue with that. We wouldn't be able to do that, but you'd be able to get them the things like your computers and your internet and things like that that are used for the business.
Yeah, actually, deducting the tuition is very difficult through an entity, especially if it's a related person. There are a couple ways to do it, but even the most lenient way is going to require to be a working condition fringe benefit that is closely connected to the business and what that person does. So they don't make it easy to reimburse for education.
Nope. But what you do is you get tax-free money out and then you use it for education.
Yep.
So I don't care about writing off education as much as I care about getting tax-free money for it. We're going to jump into stock options if I can get my act together here. All right. How many stock option trades must one make in a year to be considered a professional trader by the IRS? Very interesting question. So the answer is, do you want to say it?
Well, the activity has to be regular and frequent. So we're talking every day you need to be trading, or almost every day.
Yeah, so the IRS, so first off, there's no such thing as a trader in the Internal Revenue Code. They don't define it. So somebody started calling people a trader. And they said, basically, my activities in stocks and options rise to the level of it's my primary source of business, and I qualify as a business. But unlike other businesses where you actually have a test, these guys just say, hey, it has to be frequent, regular, continuous, and you need to be doing the daily swings. And how do we get there? We go to the courts and we try to figure this thing out.
So they're going to be looking at the individual trades. They're, like Toby said, you're looking for the short-term swings if you're a trader. These are not long-term holdings. As a matter of fact, a person can be a trader for some securities and an investor for other securities.
Mm-hmm. There is an answer, though. This is weird. If it's your primary source of income, the IRS has come out and said 720 trades is enough. But there's been people that did not qualify with over 1,500 trades. We're talking round trips here. So it's a lot more activity than what you might be thinking. It's a lot of trades.
Right. One of the big things they look at is what your purpose is in trading, what you're actually seeking to do with each trade.
What we know is that from a number of the cases is if you have a W-2 job, it's probably not going to happen for you.
Right.
But there's a workaround. So the workaround, it goes like this. And I'm just going to do this really quick because, again, we have so many questions. You put your trading account. So I'm just going to use a dollar sign. So pretend that's a brokerage account. This needs to be a partnership. So if you've heard me talk about this for many, many sessions, you heard me say it can be an LLC tax as a partnership. That's more than likely what we're doing. The easiest thing to do then is to hang a corporation, and this would be a C Corp, as its manager. Now, we're doing this for two reasons. Number one, we're going to capture all of our expenses right here at the corporate level, and we don't have a problem with that. A corporation that's set up as a management company is immediately in business as soon as it has a management agreement. Partnership agreements and LLCs require a manager. So any LLC, you have to decide whether it's going to be managed by members or managed by a manager. And you're just going to say, hey, it's managed by a manager. So we actually want that corporation to be a partner. It's going to receive a K-1, but it's also going to receive something called guaranteed payments to partner. You want it to actually be receiving that. And the reason being is because Schedule A expenses are gone. I'm not going to get into the technicality of it, but if you pay a third party to manage your trading account, you cannot deduct it. Some people are going to say that's not true. It used to not be true. The Tax Cut and Jobs Act eliminated it completely. So it's no longer a miscellaneous itemized deduction because there are no longer miscellaneous itemized deductions. That's gone. So this is the game in town. You could potentially put the corporation, put the trading account inside the corporation, because corporations are businesses just when you set them up. But you're going to be doing one of those two things. And frankly, if it's an account of any size, you're using the C Corp. The reason being is that when you're a trader, you're filing your expenses on Schedule C and your gain is on Schedule D. So you have zero income showing up on Schedule C. That kicks you out and makes the IRS hate you. And the IRS likes to audit. So some people said, hey, would futures fall under that? Yeah, futures, any sort of trading, any sort of securities. And if you're under C Corp, you're golden. You just know that when the money's made, it's not long-term gains or short-term gains. It's just income to the corporation. But that's not a problem. We're usually using it to grab expenses.
Now, we also have the mark-to-market election.
That's a big one on Trader. I think you're required to do the mark-to-market.
And I think at that point, your gains and losses also switch over to the Schedule C.
Mark-to-market, MLM.
Which basically says every year you're recognizing gains and losses.
Yeah, and here's the thing. So mark-to-market, in a nutshell, you treat everything you have as though you liquidated it on the last day of the year.
Correct.
Now, here's the problem. It's going to date us a little bit. Do you remember Qualcomm?
Yep.
There was a year where Qualcomm went up like $600 at the very end of the year. I mean, it was going up $30 a day. It was crazy. I had leaps on it. I thought I was a genius. There was days where you make a couple hundred thousand and you think like, ah, this is easy. Why doesn't everybody do this? And then you learn the lesson of why doesn't everybody do this? Because the market beats the hell out of you every time you think you're smart. So what mark-to-market does is treats it as though you sold it. even though you didn't. And so then Qualcomm takes its dive. And this is the reason that I never tell people to do trader. Like, you have to really, like, you'd have to force me to make you a trader. It's because I got to watch people who could not sell the stock and get enough money to cover the tax bill that came due. In other words, they treated it as though it was sold on December 31st, and then it took a nosedive. And that's all loss that you can't write off. The gain was in the previous year. The loss is now in the year that you're selling it. And even though you never sold those stocks, you have to pay the gain as though you did. So you had that, let's say you had $600 on a share and you owe 200 bucks of it. And then come March or whatever it is, that stock is worth 200 bucks and you're selling it, hopefully just to pay the tax bill. There's nothing you can do about it. You have to. And then if it creates a loss, you can't write off that loss. You only get to take $3,000 a year. So we saw people just get torn up. And yeah, it's Sherry, you're right. It says mark to market is the worst thing you can do. And it's really only for people that are losing money, not making money. Amen. That's exactly right. So I just don't do it. So like, if you force us to, then we'll do it, but we'll be giving you a big old disclaimer saying there's a better way.
Yeah.
So isn't that fun? If I use my C Corp as the manager for my flips, okay, so can I also trade within that same company, or does that complicate things? Kim, I would not, like the C Corp, you wouldn't necessarily trade in. You could have it manage another partnership. So in my little picture here, you would just create one of these. And even though the C Corp is managing another LLC, it's okay. We don't care. We're just using that C Corp because we want to create a management entity and we want to be able to write things off and we want to get all of our expenses created into one thing. Let's see, is there a way to structure my business so that I'm able to write off business expenses against the interest payments received? Deborah, it's interesting you say that because that could be that same entity. Whenever you have income coming in, you could have a rental LLC. So I'm just going to say rents. You could have an interest LLC that's where you're loaning money. And all of those can be managed by a corporation.
And going back to what you're saying about the corporation being a partner and receiving a K-1, this corporation is also a very small partner in the partnership.
Yeah.
So it's not seeing a lot of portfolio income coming across, but mainly those guaranteed payments from managing the partnership.
Yep. Spoken like a true accountant. Love it. All right. So then somebody says, well, hey, could the C Corporation have a different year end? Yeah. And so quite often we make this guy a different year end than you, so that if we get to the end of a year and we need to push some money into next year, we don't want to pay tax on it now, we can do it.
Yeah.
And for those of you guys we lost, it's okay. You'll get it. We teach classes on this. Yeah. So some of you guys already get it. You're already there. If not, I'm going to give you guys some offers. Come get some education. Make it really painless and so much fun, because taxes should be fun. Like, once you start realizing you're putting money in your pocket, you'll get jazzed about it. All right. Somebody says, if the LLC is an LLC and not a partnership, how does that work? Paul, LLCs are not a tax designation. So we have to know how that LLC is taxed. So an LLC could be taxed as a disregarded entity, which means it's ignored. It could be taxed as a partnership, S Corp, C Corp. It literally, you know, it doesn't exist to the IRS. They just say, hey, how do you want us to treat it? So that's perfect. So disregarded, then we might want to change that. So if you have an LLC that's disregarded flowing down to you and you want to write off expenses to that corporation, so I'll go back to this, then we would just need to give that corporation a little bit of the interest, maybe 1%, 2%, yep, whatever. And change this, and we can do that easy. Can you do that? You can still do that.
Absolutely. We just don't want to be paying management fees to that corporation if they're not a partner with
you. It has to be a guaranteed payment to partner. All right. So this is a fun one, because I wouldn't even have known that it was backwards, but this is literally from a client. So somebody's sending this in. Is Tax Turbo comparable to using a CPA? So just to make Jeff happy, is AKA TurboTax comparable to using a CPA? So the answer is no, but just, I know, texture. Hey, got to make fun of people a little bit. All right. So the reason why, and I'll just show you a couple things. So first off, this is a life lesson that you could tell anybody that you want to harass. But if you teach this to your kids and they get it, then you just did it yourself a huge favor. Poor people tend to focus on price. Rich people tend to focus on value. So I could pay $100 to get my return done, but it cost me $10,000. Nah, price was low, value not so good. Or I could pay $10,000 to somebody, but it saves me $100,000. It's quite literally, 1,000% higher price, but the value is even more. So that's the way I look. But we want to see if that's actually the case with TurboTax. So I just pulled up their little complaint board just because it's fun. You can go on the internet, type in TurboTax complaints. And there's this big thing. And you can kind of see the problem with using computer programs. When you complain to it, it doesn't do anything. So you can see there was 183 complaints, had a zero rating, had a one star on 183 reviews. And the reason being is because, well, it's not really going to respond to you. So that's it. So and people get mad because, frankly, it's not your accountant. But better than that, I actually found a newspaper article somebody wrote on this, and I thought it was pretty fun. Somebody says, you can't put a price on Scott. Yes, we can. No, I'm just kidding. So here's TurboTax. They actually did a whole bunch, and so I've been just grabbing the highlights. So they did the same set of facts to a bunch of different people. The cost for TurboTax, if our online in business, was $111.90. Tax refund they got back was $34.91. So the total savings, you subtract those, you got $3,379.10. I'm not going to read all the stuff. But they said, hey, it was cool. Then they went to their neighborhood accountant. And the neighborhood accountant said, hey, it's $400. And they said, hey, that seems really high because I could get it done for $100 for my software. But then let's take a look at the total savings. The total savings after paying $400 to the accountant was $3,431. And there it is. TurboTax was $3,379. So I know what you're saying, Rob. Robert says, hey, your tax refund is not a saving. No, it's what you get back. So I gave money to get something done. So all we're doing is comparing the total amount that I actually received get to keep. So if I pay $111 and I get a refund for $34.91, the total amount of all that money I get to keep is $3,379. In other words, that's you have a tax obligation. And yes, you can add questions here. So Robert, you can ask questions. So the cost for the accountant was $400, but you got a larger refund. Chances are because they're looking for things. It's not as easy as just using a computer program. So it's basically the same thing. And so somebody says, I would get the same money back if Anderson did the reader. Yeah, what we're talking about is the accountant. So, and the answer is no, actually, in the newspaper article, you can just Google this stuff yourself. They were looking at the actual tax refunds back, and it's undeniable. When you're doing the free systems, and frankly, the thing is that I have problems with are H&R Block and TurboTax have an agreement with, or Intuit have an agreement with the government, 60% of the returns are supposed to be free. 60% of the returns done in the United States are supposed to fall under the free, but they're not letting you do it for free. They're charging you. And this was something that was just in Congress, and they renewed this agreement to these guys, even though they found that they were hiding the free system. In other words, they're trying to charge you, even though it's supposed to be free. So for someone who's doing a free return, it's probably not going to do too much for you to use an accountant. For somebody doing a return that has any bit of complexity, and that would be investors, anybody with a Schedule E, D, or C, do not use tax software. It does not know what to ask you. And what it's asking you is conclusions, but there are three or four ways to get to a conclusion. It's not asking that. That's why you use a CPA. The other reason you use a CPA is because you can blame them for stuff. And I say that not in jest, is that if you have penalties, you ever find you have penalties and you did it yourself, you're not getting out of that penalty. You have penalties and you relied on a tax professional, that is a reason to get out of the penalty. So, you know, so I'm just going to tell you guys again, there's people that look at dollars and there's people that look at, I mean, at the end of the day, we're all looking at dollars, but there's some people that look at price and not on the total value, and that's all it is. And the answer to somebody, are all the Anderson people CPAs? No, we have EAs, CPAs, and accountants. CPAs are a state designation. EAs is a federal designation. Accountant is a degree. There's about 80% of the preparers out there are non-licensed preparers, non-credentialed preparers. And what we keep finding in the Government Accountability Office actually did a study on this. This will freak you out. They did a study on the chain preparers, and they gave them a set of facts. Do you know what the accuracy rate for chain preparers was? I should actually make this a question. I should have done this. This is fun because everybody guesses wrong. But the chain preparers, the accuracy rate on business returns was a whopping, and I'm going to write it up so you don't have to think about this, 0%. Chain preparers. That was the Government Accountability Office. It's crazy. So I just look at it and say, hey, you know what? If I want it done wrong, I can go to a chain preparer. If I want to do it myself, hey, I could probably do a better job than just having somebody who doesn't know what they're doing do it. But if I want it done right, then I'm going to have a much greater likelihood that I'm going to get it done if I'm using a professional. Now, that said, use a professional who actually knows your industry because it's way different. If I am a dentist, I want to use professionals that work with businesses. If I am a real estate investor, I want to work with professionals that actually do investment because same office, did studies on small accountants too. And when it came to Schedule E's and C's, it was still about, it was like a 4% accuracy rate. It's really complicated stuff. I wish it was easy, but there's 100 ways to do something. And so getting to the right answer just means you have to deal with somebody who actually has done it a few thousand times.
Yeah, several years ago, the IRS actually wanted to test preparers who were not CPAs, EAs, or attorneys. And it was, like you said, the chains and the independent accountants, tax preparers, who pushed so hard against it, and it finally got thrown out. But the plan was to make sure that preparers knew what they were doing. So be careful out there.
Yep. This is what's interesting. If you, like with us, we just, in most of the cases, you're just checking off on something or defending the audit. You want to have somebody that can actually defend. If you are dealing with a lot of preparers, they're not licensed to do anything in front of the IRS. So they can't defend you even if they wanted to, even if they were really cool. The other thing is the P10 test, it wasn't actually a P10. They actually tried to do a two-day exam and they got beat in federal court. The court said that the IRS didn't have the authority to police examiners or the preparers. So it means that change means H&R Block. Yeah, any change preparer is the Liberties and the Jackson Hewitts and all that stuff. And I'm not defaming them. It's a Government Accountability Office report. You can go look at it. I'm telling the truth is always a defense, although they don't like it when we talk about it.
And I'm shaking my head in disgust. You can't see that.
But. Yeah. So it's not that we don't like the chain preparers. It's just that a lot of people work for the chain preparers that shouldn't be doing your return here because, again, it's part-time help.
Attention all real estate investors, business owners, stock traders, and anyone looking to get out of the rat race for good. We all know time is money, but did you know there's a wealth of resources on how to make more money, keep more money, and protect what you've earned all for free online? Anderson Business Advisors YouTube channel offers free resources on asset protection and tax reduction from lawyers and CPAs designed to help you keep more money in your pocket. To learn how to limit your liability, protect what you've earned, and minimize your tax burden all for free, subscribe to Anderson Business Advisors on YouTube today.
All right. Somebody says P10 test, paid tax identification number, paid tax. What is it?
Prepare tax identification.
All right. Prepare tax identification. Yeah. So everybody that does prepares returns has to have one.
Yes.
If they're getting paid for it. The problem that you have is only 4 states actually have any licensing requirement for paid tax preparers. I know Oregon is one, Maryland, I think California, I'm trying to think what the other one is. Can't remember, but like almost no states require any sort of actual credentials. So it's freaky. Do you need a CPA? You don't need a CPA to do your returns. Now, Jeff here is a CPA for how many years?
28,
29. 29 years. So he's been doing it a long time. So he's going to always say you need a CPA, right?
No, actually, I'm not, because I've worked with some very smart people who are not CPAs, and I've worked with CPAs that couldn't find their way out the door. So
couldn't find their butt with both hands, right? No, that's the thing. The CPAs are, again, it's a state designation. It's not necessarily a preparer designation. And do you even go over tax prep during?
Yes, CPA? A part of the CPA exam is tax law.
So, you know, but there is, if you're an EA, then you actually are, it's a federal license to actually prepare to practice in front of the IRS. Actually, I like EAs quite a bit. In fact, I found a lot of them that are very knowledgeable. But again, it always depends. What I care about is the experience of the person who's making the ultimate decision. I don't even care who prepares my return. I care who looks at it and tells me whether it's done right. All right. How can I pay my daughter who works for the corporation a salary to help her with her buying her own rental property? All right. This gets really interesting. So when you start paying your kids, here's the fun part. I would pay them a salary through the company. I'd have them work for it. But since they don't own it, I'm assuming that they don't own it, they just have W-2 income. And it helps them qualify for literally everything if you're going to use credit. So if you're going to buy a rental property and you need a loan, then you go to the lender and you ask them what she needs to make to qualify for certain loans. So if you want to buy rental properties, and I would say always make sure that you have cash flow rental properties and factor in the cost of the debt to make sure that you're, you know, I use 50% as an expense ratio. So if I have $500 coming in a month, I want to make sure my debt is below that. I'm not using the gross amount that I'm receiving. So let's say I'm renting a house for $1,000 a month. I'm only going to assume that I'm going to be able to keep $500 of it just because I need to make sure that I'm doing repairs, maintenance, I'm going to have vacancy, and I need to pay property managers and things like that. But I would just make sure that you're factoring that in. If your debt is more than $500, don't do it. You're going negative. But you would just ask them what they need to see, and then you can make your daughter look the way that they need to see. And frankly, she, again, her tax bracket's probably going to be less than yours unless she's a thriving adult, maybe married or something where the income's really high. Otherwise, you're just looking at it saying, let's assume it's my daughter who's 21 and I say, hey, I want to make sure she qualifies for a loan. I'm going to ask what kind of salary do they need to see and for how long? How long do you look back? So it's different interest. Somebody asks, I have two businesses in different industries. Should I get two different CPAs, each with experience in the different industry, or only one CPA? It depends. It really depends on how big those businesses are. If they are less than $1 million, I'm probably going one CPA. If they're both over $1 million, then I may say, hey, I need to have one for each business. And you could pick one to do your personal return. What say you?
Well, I kind of feel like you should have all of your accounting business in one place. It goes into the tax planning and certain other planning. It makes it much harder if you have multiple CPAs.
Unless the businesses are in different places. I mean, I don't want to disagree with you, but if I have a business in Hawaii, then I might want to have a local. If I'm doing over a certain amount, if I'm over $1 million, I'm probably having somebody local there.
Yeah, I'm thinking when you're talking about big strategies, whether it's DB plans and stuff like that.
Agreed, 100%. Then you need to have a planner. But just remember, CPA, so there's tax prep. That's actually a really good point. So you have tax prep and you have tax planning. Don't confuse them for each other.
Right.
Your preparer should know your industry so that they're preparing the right return and they know how to capture it. For example, if you're a real estate professional and you don't make an aggregation election, which is just a simple line item on a Schedule E, it could cost you hundreds of thousands of dollars. Knowing to put that one line on there requires somebody who actually does it. That's a preparer issue. A planner is somebody who looks at the 10,000 foot view and says, if you're making money over here and you're making money over here, here's where you're going to be personally. We need to be worried about qualifying for 199A. We need to be looking at whether we're exceeding our standard deduction on things for like charitable giving and stuff like that. We need to be looking at, would it make sense to qualify as a real estate professional? Should you be looking at cost segregation? What other things are, should we be looking at a defined benefit plan as opposed to just standard contribution plan? You need somebody who understands that, looking at it from that angle. Now, that said, you could still have different preparers, but you really need a good planner.
And let me add one more thing is that if you have a large company or multiple, especially multiple large companies, at that point, you need to think about having good people inside your company.
Yeah.
At that point, you may want to get a CPA or somebody at least has strong full bookkeeper or knowledge
That's
within
really
the company.
And I would say this, and this isn't really related to this question at all. Your bean counter, no offense, Jeff, your bean counter should not be writing your checks. And this is going to trip out some of you guys. Every time I see theft, it's usually because you've given somebody authority that has the ability to manipulate your books at the end of the day. So when I say bean counter, it doesn't mean the accountant, it means your bookkeeper. So you always want to have somebody there that's able to look over the shoulder, but they shouldn't be able to change the information, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So if I say, oh, you only made $10,000 this year, and that's because I've been feeding the money to myself on the side because I have access to the accounts and I have access to the end numbers. And you look at it and say, man, I only made $10,000. I can't believe that. That just doesn't seem right. Boy, that's horrible. Chances are it's because you gave control to somebody to give you the final number that also has the ability to manipulate that number. When you have an accountant, 99% of the time, they are not having any access and they're not really looking at that business other than from the 10,000 foot view.
We'll have to talk about internal control sometime. And what internal control is about is you can't necessarily stop all threat and theft and fraud.
Yeah.
But you don't have to make it easy.
No, and you want to be able to catch it before it gets out of hand.
Exactly.
So I had a very good friend who, and he had, again, that one person that he really trusted was doing all the books and had access to the checks and $110,000 over 2 years, just drained the company and was completely unaware because when she would give him the books, he was like, oh yeah, okay, that looks good. But he wasn't going and looking at the accounts and making sure that they tied in. And that's really what a good accountant's doing is they're saying, all right, let's look at the balance sheet. People are going to say, why do you need to see the balance sheet? Why not just the P&L? Well, I need to see whether these things tie in. When you have profit, then it should be existing on that asset sheet somewhere. Let's see where it ties in. You're going to watch people get very nervous if they have bad books or if you have a bad bookkeeper. They will not be able to pass that. You will catch them in about 5 seconds.
Right.
Because it won't tie. All right. How many rental properties should I own before I create my own C Corp? This goes back to a previous question. It's not how many properties, it's how much are you making. My mom wants to move to Florida by keeping her. Okay, we'll keep that. Oh, my mom wants to move to Florida, is keeping a real estate investment in Texas. Should she retain a CPA based in Texas or Florida to prepare her annual return? For your personal return, it's probably where she, it might be where she's located, although nowadays you can just pick wherever. It's frankly whatever works for your mom. And when I was talking about aggregation on Schedule C, were you referring to cost segregation? No. Aggregation is a term that you use for all your rental activities, your real estate activities. So an aggregation election means treat all of my rentals as one business.
Right.
That's different than a cost segregation. All right. Some people are saying, hey, update your slides. I am. I was just answering some questions that were coming in off the internet. So sorry about that. All right. I am currently in an employer contributing 401k. It means it's probably an employer match. They're making contributions on your behalf. Can I still start a self-directed 401k to use for investing in real estate? So the answer is
absolutely yes.
Absolutely. Schmootly. So you can have as many 401ks as you want. I could have three employers, frankly, all contributing to a 401k on my behalf, as long as I qualify for them. It's going to be kind of tough to do it for more than two, but you could. There's no rule of preventing it. Here's the big thing. You just can't go above the maximum amount per year for the employee deferral section. Everybody else, you're capped at the contribution limit per 401k. So what is it this year? It's 57,000?
I think that sounds a little high, but stay around 55, 56.
Ah, shoot. Now I have to go look that up. And where's my little tax cheat sheet? I know I have one floating around here.
There's a couple of contribution limits. One is how much you can defer from your salary. And the other one is how much everybody can defer to you.
Yeah, 56K. Paula, you are my... Thank you.
Hey, I said that.
Somebody says it's cocktail hour. How do we... We need to talk faster. All right. So,
but those limits apply to you as an individual. It's not per plan. It's per everybody.
The 56 is per plan.
No, that's per, that's total.
No, I promise you.
The 415 limit?
Yep. So here's how it works. So my 19,000 is my employee contribution amount.
Right.
So I am aggregate amongst all my plans. I can only defer my personal salary up to 19,000, but my employer could contribute based off of my salary up to 25% and defer it. Mm-hmm. But I can have two or three plans. I could actually, the example the IRS gives is you have two plans, each contributing $50,000. Can you do it? The answer is yes. Actually, I can. I promise you, I bet you a dollar on that.
I'm going to look this up.
Look it up. Ask Corey, too. He's pretty knowledgeable. But anyway, so let's go on. So yeah, you can have multiple plans. I promise you can have multiple plans. We'll have a bone of contention since we have disagreement.
Yeah, definitely. Yes, you can have multiple plans. I'll agree with that.
All right. Does a leasing real estate subsidiary pass through? This is going to be all you. I'm going to give this one because you love this. Pass through have to pay self-employment tax, or will its holding company pay the taxes?
So if you're renting real estate, nobody pays self-employment tax because that is not considered earned income.
See, isn't that wonderful? Don't you love having accountants here? Nobody pays any self-employment tax.
So self-employment tax is that tax on earned income, like your Schedule C income or sometimes your partnership income, depending on what it is. But the subsidiary, the pass-through LLC is not going to pay any tax.
Mm-hmm.
You will pay tax on any earnings from that LLC, but it won't be self-employment tax.
See? And now here's the one thing. The lawyer in me can't help this. Does a leasing real estate subsidiary... So if you are the manager, then it's active and then it'll flow through to you. It's whatever is passing the income to you. But if you own real estate and you're just leasing it, and for example, I have, here's the common scenario. I have a bunch of real estate companies. So I have a bunch of properties, what's called real estate 1, 2, 3, and they're all held by a holding LLC. There is no self-employment tax on rental income, period. Rents, royalties, dividends, interest, and capital gains do not pay self-employment tax.
Right.
So rents, royalties, dividends, interest, and capital gains. Is trading option stocks considered earned income? No, because it's capital gains.
Right.
All right. Let's keep jumping on. Oh, forgot to do this. This is where you can continue to educate yourself. So we're calling it the Bulletproof Investor. And what that is something really cool. It's a online course. That's a 3-part video series. It's tax and asset protection for real estate investors. That's Clint Coons, my partner's book. It's very, very, very good. It's 2 tickets to tax and asset protection workshop. That's a 3-day event. It is a strategy session with one of our professionals going and creating a wealth planning blueprint for you. So it's all of that, and it's $197. But because it's two for Tuesday, then you also get the TaxWise workshop, and you get access to all three TaxWise workshops. You can get all the recordings for the previous two, and the last one was really awesome, I can just say. The January, I think we did one in January. It was great, but the one in June was really amazing. 31 strategies we hit during that. It was just cool. It's 2 days of nothing but tax. But you get access to all the recordings, and you can live stream. We have one coming up, I believe it's in November, for 2 days. So we're talking about 5 days of workshops. Come out to Vegas if you want and hang out with us on all of this. On the TaxWise, you get the live streams and the recordings. On the Bulletproof, you get an online course and a book, and you get to have a meeting. It's all $197. I think that's pretty amazing. And there's a link that Patty will send out to everybody if you want to do that, or we'll just follow up. Not going to spend more time on that. All right. How can I set up bank accounts for LLCs and have the funds flow to the holding corp? How do I report the income for tax purposes? So number one, you don't have to have bank accounts on all of your LLCs. So especially if you have a property manager, it is a factor having a bank account that a court could look at to see whether they are going to acknowledge the existence of that LLC. But it is not a what's called a dispositive factor. In other words, it doesn't implode if it doesn't have it. And frankly, let's say the same scenario that I just mapped out before. I have a bunch of real estate and I have three rentals and they're held by a holding entity. And I have a property manager out here, so PM. And the tenants are all out there paying the property manager. We're paying you money. And the property manager is netting it out and sending it to the holding. The only bank account really needs to be that holding. There's no other reason really to have those three. They're disregarded for tax purposes anyway. Makes life easier. Are you still looking up that 401k?
I'm looking on my.
I promise.
I'm listening.
I promise you. Now we're going to bet $1.10.
Well, and you know, it's not unusual. These property managers usually have accounts to hold your cash in until it's distributed to you anyway. So.
Yep.
If they're collecting all the rents and paying all the expenses, they could just hold this money into perpetuity.
Yeah, this is cool. Somebody just says, so if your manager of the holding LLC for your rentals, and you're doing all the management for the property, you don't have to pay self-employment tax. If you're the manager, you would have self-employment tax. So if you are the PM, the only place where there's self-employment tax at all is right here, but you're zeroing it out. All of the income that's flowing through down here up through here to you. So I'm pointing at the tenants. We don't want them to get the money. We want you to get the money. Dollars. We want you to get that money is not subject to self-employment tax. Somebody says, should the holding LLC be an S corp? No. If you are in this type of rental real estate, it should be either a disregarded entity or taxed as a partnership, depending on whether you're borrowing money at all. If you are using commercial property like you're doing apartments, then you'll more than likely need to be able to sell it and you'll need to see a separate tax return for it. So that's going to be a partnership. If it's all you and it's all cash and we don't care about loans and things like that, we'll probably make a disregard. What if you have a corporation that is acting as a property manager? Can we pay a percentage to the corporation? Yes, exactly, Deirdre. That's exactly what you do. And usually the corporation's accepting the funds and then it's netting it out and sending it up to, you know, handling all the expenses and netting it out and sending it up to the holding company. So you get it. And so the holding company LLC is not attached to the C Corp, correct? The holding company LLC is managed by the C Corp 9 times out of 10. What if the real estate is short term? For example, vacation property. Oh, you guys are killing me. All right, so Airbnb. Here's the rule, 7 days or less equals active. Now it's no longer passive real estate. You are now a trader business. And so if you're doing Airbnb, the way you get around getting hit with any sort of monster tax is you do the Airbnb through a corp, S or C works, but you have the rental. Let's say that this is a rental property. It leases long to your little corporation. This is why you do a blueprint, guys. Your facts and circumstances are going to dictate you. If you stepped on that landmine, you'd be really upset. And the problem that you have is most people don't understand the difference between Airbnb type income and long-term lease income. And so they just put it all together. And the next thing you know, you're paying self-employment tax. You lose a lot of benefits. You can't do depreciation. You don't get, if you sell it, you're not going to be able to do your 1031 exchange. You lose a whole bunch of benefits. So somebody says, can I repeat that again? I actually did it. We did a video series on it, so you can always look at it. But what you do is, in a nutshell, I'm just going to draw this up real quick for you guys. It'll take 2 seconds. Trust me. So here's my rental. I have a rental property and I'm going to put that in an LLC and I'm going to lease it long, meaning 1 year to 2 years. I'm going to lease it to a corporation. This is the corporation that is the host and it is going to do all the short-term leases. If you're familiar with Airbnb, you know what these guys are called. They're called guests. And so then the money comes into the corp. So let's say that I'm leasing this at $3,000 a month. I'm leasing a house. Then this is rental income. This is passive. And my guests pay me $4,500 a month total. And you look at the average stay. What they do is they look at the total days that it was rented and divided it by the guests, the bookings. So if I'm 7 days or less, then I'm active. So the way around it, again, is if you're even close, don't mess around with the days. You just say, hey, you know what? Let's say I'm bringing in $4,500. I immediately pay my rent of $3,000, which gives me a net of $1,500. And I have all the expenses associated with the property. I have to do the linens. I have to do all the other stuff with that extra money. I can get it out to myself. So I hope that makes.
So we actually ran into this very recently, only the rental property was a portion of their house.
Oh, wow. That's kind of crazy. So they were doing
with separate entrance and all that. But what they hadn't taken into consideration was they had to rent that portion of their house to the corporation to make this work.
Yep. And it works. It works. Absolutely. Somebody says 30 days or more is okay. Yeah. If you have a, if you're more than 7 days on your average rental, then you're fine. You're passive. You don't have to worry about the corporation. You just do it right out of that LLC. Anyway, hope that answers that question. I'm a subcontractor. Do I need a corporation to protect myself? So the answer to me is always going to be yes, because here's what we have. We have two types of liability, always. And this is more of an asset protection question, but there is some tax reason too. First off, if you are a sub, then you are an active business and the new IRS data came out. And if you don't want to get audited and lose, then you make sure that you are an S corp as the sub.
Okay.
It's going to save you about on every 100,000. It's going to save you about, or I say the first 10,000 or first 100,000, it's going to save you about $10,000. That's the typical savings just because the self-employment tax is greatly reduced when you use an S-corp. You're taking a small salary and the profits flow out to you without being taxed on self-employment, which is old age, death, and survivors in Medicare. It's 15.3%, but the actual tax ramification is 14%. So on 100 grand, I'm probably paying myself 30,000 and I'm going to just 14 times six, whatever that is. So it's going to save me some money. All right, that's number one. But the risk is on the inside, and this is called inside risk. So I'm going to give you the 2-minute version. So imagine that this was your luggage and you were going to, on vacation and you had a whole bunch of nice clothes that you were taking with you and you threw your shaving cream or toothpaste, better yet, your toothpaste. You threw your toothpaste into your luggage, but you didn't put the toothpaste into anything.
You just threw the tube in.
You get on a plane. What's going to happen when that pressure hits it? It's a good chance you're going to get some toothpaste on your nice stuff. That's called inside risk. If that tube of toothpaste explodes, you're going to get it all inside the suitcase. If, as a subcontractor, one of your jobs explodes, and it's not even something you necessarily did, but they say you could be 1% at fault and under joint and several liability, you get to be 100% responsible for your 1% at fault. You know, like there was a ladder left out and it fell and hit somebody in the head and caused them serious pain. Nobody knows who put that ladder there, but you were there. You get to endure that. And if you don't believe that happens, we just had one happen in Vegas where somebody was rehabbing a house and the carport just fell in and killed a guy, just squished him. You know, everybody and their mother's getting sued on that one. So that's inside risk. We want to keep that risk from coming out and following you the rest of your life. You get to be garnished all over the place. Say you had a really rich spouse, or let's say you just had some money tucked aside. We don't want them to be able to come get that. That's inside risk. And then there's outside risk. That's you, I, and your family. So let's say you have a wonderful teenage son who loves to drive fast. You don't want them to be able to take your business away. That's called outside liability because of something that happens. So when you're a subcontractor, there's really two sides. I'm worried about the business from you. I'm worried about you from your business. And I'm just trying to keep, you know, likelihood of threat. And it's not like everybody gets sued. Here, I got to give you some hair. Sorry, Jeff. There you go. You got some hair.
I don't let my kid drive my car.
I let my daughter. I saw her phone once and she had all these pictures and she's like driving and she like puts her leg out. I'm like, you are hereby grounded. Like, what the? I don't, you know, like acrobatic driving. I said, what is this? What are you doing? Yeah, kids.
And the other aspect of being an S corporation, 20% deduction.
Oh, yeah, you get the 199A deduction. Yeah. I forgot all about that. It's a good thing you're here to remind me.
That's the accountant in me. I can't help it.
Yeah, under the Tax Cut and Jobs Act, that's the big benefit for being a business. So you get to take that too. And anyway, there's a whole bunch of reasons. What we always like to do is look at your facts and circumstances, and we can compare. The likelihood of you get, let's say you made $150,000. I know the numbers because I was looking at the IRS data book, the recently released data, because everybody does that. Not in May, it's 1,200% more likelihood to be audited if you're a sole proprietor than an S corp under that circumstance. And the sole proprietors are losing at a whopping 94% of the time. So it's like, you might want to be a corporation. Plus, corporations can do an accountable plan. There's huge tax benefits to using an accountable plan. And you can fund your 401k. And you can do all sorts of fun stuff. Anyway, enough of that.
Don't let your kid drive.
So anyway, I own rental property as an individual. How can I deduct interest expense on this property? Jeff?
Well, the first thing you're going to deduct is any mortgage interest that this property is secured by.
And it's on your schedule.
Schedule E.
So it's your 1040 schedule E.
It's your 1040 schedule E, right. And you'll get a 1098 if it's you have mortgage interest. But you might have other interests that you can deduct. You may have
This is a big one, actually. I know where you're going. Let's say you have a house, right?
Right.
Are you talking about your primary residence?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So this is your primary. It used to be that you could write off the mortgage interest that was off of that primary, no matter what you used it for.
Right.
Now it has to be used on that piece of property, and it's subject to the standard deduction. So it's Schedule A. But if you use part of that equity.
So I refinanced my house and got an extra $100,000 out of it.
So let's say Jeff's example is you took $100,000 out of the house, equity. Let's just say it's an equity line. The mortgage interest, you could report it on Schedule E. So you don't have to worry about the standard deduction. You don't have to worry about the new rules. And you don't have to worry about missing out on a bunch of money. TurboTax couldn't tell you that. All right. Let's keep going on. All right. Even if you do a cash out refinance. Yes, Ross. Even if you do it, you got to make sure that you're putting it towards something. So if I take money out of my house, in order to write it off on my Schedule A, it has to be purchased or being put back into the property. So it's acquisition indebtedness is what they call it.
So to be able to deduct that interest on Schedule E, you have to put that money into that rental property.
And then somebody says, but isn't cash out refi already included on the 1098? Yes, but you get to decide where you're going to take the deduction.
Correct.
Somebody says, if you put it into the financial markets, you cannot write it off on your Schedule A. If you take it out and put it in the financial markets, then that interest would be...
be investment interest.
It would be investment interest against the gains that you make. The problem that you have is if you're putting in the financial market trust, is if you lose.
Yeah.
And then somebody says, but that is like, it depends. Sherry?
Sherry.
It is. She's just misbehaving out there. No, that's good. What if I'm using home equity loan to buy properties in my LLC as rentals, Sarah? Perfect question. And that goes on to your Schedule E. And it's either going on your Schedule E directly on your 1040, or it's going on Schedule E via, if you have a partnership, it's going via the K-1. It's going on page 2. But either way, it's on your Schedule E. And so, yes, you get to write that off. Very good question. All right. This is a big one. Can you explain the depreciation recapture for a property that was never depreciated? This is where it really sucks. So the IRS has this funky rule. And I should say it's the tax code. It's what, you know, it's, IRA. Do you know what publication it is? I think it's 946 or something like that.
I am not sure.
All right. But the rule is that if you can deduct or depreciate, I'll even say it even more succinct. If you can depreciate, you must recapture.
946 was right, by the way.
Oh, cool. Publication 946. I think it's page 12. Actually has this. I bet you I'm right. I bet you another dollar.
I am not looking.
I bet you it's page 12. Check me. Stuff sticks. All right. So you must recapture. So
Form 4797, which is where you report a sale of investment of this type of property, actually says how much depreciation were you able to take, not how much did you actually take. So it's allowed or taken.
Yep. It's if you could have done it, you have to recapture it. Now, recapture it's called a 1250 recapture. And if it's a 1250 recapture, and then
no, it is 1250, yeah.
And it's maxed at 25%. It's your ordinary tax bracket maxed at 25%.
But will not exceed your total gain.
That's correct.
So if you have $80,000 of depreciation, but only a $30,000 gain, your recapture is only going to be $30,000.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we see this quite a bit. It's surprising how many accountants don't do depreciation.
You have the second house, and it was your second property, and you're renting it out.
Right.
And maybe you rent it to a kid, right? And you don't think about it. All right, they're going to pay me $1,000 or give me something. It's an investment property. Would it be an investment property?
I think so.
If it's the kids, all of a sudden you're entitled to depreciate it.
So you haven't depreciated this puppy for 5, 6, 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
There is a way to fix this.
And that is to take a depreciation 1 year, take it all, right?
Yeah, we do what's called a change of accounting method. I know we talked about this before, but you're actually changing your accounting method for depreciation from zero to this is the way it's supposed to be done. And you report all that back depreciation that you should have taken in the current year. And it does need to be approved by IRS, but it's usually an automatic approval.
Yep. What Jeff said, change of a tax, take it all in one lump sum. I just know you just take it all in one big lump sum. I know somebody just did
an essay.
The wording that authorizes your escape from depreciation recapture is found in the last sentence of section 1250B3, which states a pertinent part. If the taxpayer can establish by adequate records and other sufficient evidence that the amount allowed as a deduction for any period was less than the amount allowable, the amount taken into account for such period shall be the amount allowed. I have no idea what that means. Let's take a look at an example. Say that you claim zero for home office depreciation for the last 5 years. How would you prove the zero? Easy. Your tax returns prove the zeros. You claim the home office deduction on IRS. You wouldn't do the home office IRS, the home office on 8829. We do it as an administrative office where you don't actually have that.
Yeah, with the reimbursements, you don't have to take depreciation.
Yeah. So, but on the rest of it, it's a lot. I don't know how you'd be able to do it. Let's take a look. Zero depreciation, avoid your evidence, how you claim. Zero depreciation, avoid the double tax. Oh, I know what he's doing. So you're doing Murray Bradford. Love Murray. Amazing guy. Bradford Tax Institute's really good place. But you're talking about the depreciation recapture on a home office, which we don't want to do. We want to do it as an administrative office, and you want to do it as a accountable plan reimbursement where it's not actually depreciation. So anyway, I know what you're talking about. And yeah, you would take all the depreciation in the same year that you recapture the depreciation if you did it the way that Jeff right. just described it. How do you find out if your family CPA understands tax prep for real estate? Hayden, what I would say is, do they own any real estate and have they been doing this for themselves? So, or is it something that they do in their, do they have a bunch of real estate clients? In other words, you don't want to be the one of the 10 people that they do that has real estate. You want to be one of the hundreds of people that they do that does it. And I will check that out, Ross. I like it. Okay, Ross, email me because I'm curious. I want to see it. But I believe that's only on the home office. I don't think it's if I have an investment property. If I'm able to depreciate my investment property, I must recapture that. If I didn't take depreciation on a home office, then there's a way. If I didn't take it and I had a home office, then I would, you're right, it would be the zeros. So, but anyway, this is not on the topic, so I can wait. Healthcare gives a credit. Oh, so I'll take a look on this one. It looks like, okay. All right. So if the IRS has to approve the recapture, how long does that take? How long does it take for the change of accounting?
We usually file it with the return, and they usually accept the return right away. So it doesn't really take a long time. Often we're doing this in the same year of the sale, primarily to prevent long-term capital gains as being treated as ordinary income.
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
It's kind of a switch off.
But hey, we'll take it.
Are you looking to lower your taxes, protect your assets, and grow your wealth? Are you a real estate investor, stock trader, or business owner? If you answered yes, Anderson Advisors Tax and Asset Protection Workshop is for you. Let host Clint Coons, Toby Mathis, and Michael Bowman teach you how to protect and keep more of what you earn. Our workshops are held monthly throughout the country and via live stream. 2 in-person tickets to the workshop are only $99. To learn more about the dates and locations, visit AndersonAP.com and register today.
Let's see. I did a cash out refi in a home that with a wrapped mortgage. So they're owner financing. What form would I be able to deduct the mortgage interest if I'm paying on the mortgage loan? So in that particular case, it sounds like did a refinance cash out on a rental and be selling the home with a wrapped mortgage. So they did a cash out and they're selling it to somebody else. That sounds like an investment expense because it's an investment property.
But yeah, I mean, you would have to recognize, or one of the thing possibilities is you recognize the interest you're receiving on the front of your 1040 and you're recognizing the interest expense that you're paying.
You wouldn't want to do that. You're taking them.
No, you could take a beating, but I don't know that you can net those amounts out.
I could cash out refi. If I am still on the hook, then I'm not paying tax on it because I have risk. Right. So ordinarily, if you take cash out of something, if you pull a bunch, so you passive investors out there that put money into like a syndication and they refi the property and hand you a bunch of cash. If it's more than what you put in, you pay a long-term capital gains on that. So here is somebody because they're not at risk on the loan. In this particular case, if you're at risk for the loan, you're fine. You should take the cash out. And you'd be putting it on your Schedule E as an investment expense. I'm pretty sure I'm understanding you correctly. That's probably the answer. All right. What is the best structure to protect against the IRS piercing the veil and establishing a lien on funds?
I'm not sure that they can go past the entity.
No, this is the thing. Is the taxpayer is a taxpayer to the IRS. When you talk about veil piercing, it's a civil claim. It's a court of it's an equity term where somebody is basically saying, don't recognize this entity. We want you to ignore it so we can go after assets. So veil piercing is really an asset protection term. And what it boils down to is if you're doing things in such a manner to where you don't respect the entity and your state law allows them to, they will say, hey, you didn't do what you needed to get to have the veil and we want you to ignore it, pierce it and let me go get money. But the IRS doesn't necessarily get that.
Yep.
The IRS is looking at you as a taxpayer. Now, here's the sad truth is that there's always a responsible taxpayer on every company. When you get your when you do your SS4 and get your tax identification number, there's always a responsible party that has to go on there. And that if that's you and the company doesn't pay its taxes, guess who they can go after?
And that's particularly true on payroll taxes.
Payroll tax, they can actually go after any officer.
Anybody, if you sign that return,
yep,
they can nail you.
If you're responsible for it, and it's not just the IRS. I actually just dealt with this because I was a nominee officer on a company that didn't pay a bunch of civil fines in city of Cleveland. And so who do they try to get to pay? They go, oh, your name's on there. So they come knocking on my door and I have to show that I wasn't involved in the transaction. But they ended up honoring it, of course. But it's still one of those things where you want to make sure that you're showing, hey, this is separate from me.
Now, the one time they will certainly go after the individual is if they feel that the individual is hiding the entity's assets, mm-hmm. such as you've received a notice that you owe IRS $100,000 and you clean out the bank account.
Yep.
They're going to follow that money.
Yeah, they're going to say that you took it and that you at that point, you're making the company insolvent and you're the one who's receiving the funds and they'll go right after it.
Yeah.
Somebody says, hey, I don't understand why if you cash out refi on your property, it's not income yet. If you're an investor in a syndication and you cash it out, that it is. So this is fun. A lot of people don't realize that there are rules about this. You are a partner in a partnership and you have a capital account and you have basis. You have inside basis and you have outside basis. So let's just say that I put money in and let's say that I'm just going to use raw numbers. Let's say that you are part of an investment group that put in $1 million. You bought an apartment complex for $7 million. So you borrowed $6 million. You fix it up. It's worth $10 million. You refi that now at $10 million and you pull all the money out and it hands all the investors back the original $1 million they put in. That's not taxable. But anything over $1 million is considered return in excess of your basis. And that is taxed as long-term capital gains because you are not at risk to pay back that loan. If that company let's just say you default on that loan and nobody ever pays it back. And then they foreclose on that apartment building. You're not at risk. You already got your cash. So the second you paid that out and you weren't at risk was the second you had a transfer of wealth that's taxable. And luckily, they tax that as long-term capital gains.
Yeah, this is where we've run into what's called debt-financed distributions.
Yep.
Which can become taxable just from the aspect of it's not money that the company has. They borrowed the money.
Yep. But if you're on the hook for it, you borrow it and you're the guarantor on it.
Yeah.
Then they say, hey, you have to pay it back anyway. So you didn't really get the money. You got the money and the debt.
Right.
So when I look at your balance sheet, I'm looking for two things. I'm looking at the asset and the liability. If the liability is not there, but you got the asset, chances are you have a taxable event. Somebody says, can you do a webinar on short-term rentals? We already did. Patty, if you could kick Denise that information, because so much fun. What if you do cash out refi on a gifted property? Well, somebody's on the hook. So if you got the property, you get the basis of whoever gifted it to you. And if you are on the hook on that loan, then you wouldn't have a taxable event. So yeah, it all matters whether you're at risk. There's a lot of questions that just came in. I'm gonna have to ignore some of them so we can get through some of these. Don't worry, we'll get back to your questions. You can always ask them on the Tax Tuesday at Anderson Advisor too. Somebody says, yeah, Chris is now kicking in there. Chris, I love it. All right, I have a large amount of capital losses. So, Chris, you're up there in Minnesota, right? So you're having to deal with all that insanity. You got some weird legislatures up there. We're just going to have a little chat about that someday. All right, I have a large amount of capital losses. Are there any creative ways to reclaim these losses faster than the $3,000 a year standard?
My number one way of doing this is if you have other investments, liquid investments that have gains on them, sell those investments, sell those securities. If you really like, if you have Boeing and you want to dump it, but you can buy it back the next day. You recognize the gain, you apply it against the loss.
The wash sale is only for losses.
Wash sales are only for losses.
But so if you're harvesting your gain, then absolutely, that's what you do. You take the gain because I have losses that are carrying forward and I harvest and I know I'm not going to pay tax on it. Great. Then you buy it back and you have new basis.
Which is higher bait than it was before.
Yep. You're really smart. That's really good. Yeah, there's really no other ways to do it. Like there's no other really cool ways. You have to have capital gains to offset. Otherwise, you're just carrying. And this is why that example I gave you about mark to market earlier in the Tax Tuesday. This is why this hurts, because I am forced to recognize a bunch of gain on something that I didn't actually sell. And then it drops like a rock. And then I have losses. I have gain, but I can't offset that gain with my losses because it's forward. Yeah, hopefully some of you guys are getting that. But I saw that and I watched that happen to so many people that I'm traumatized by it. I don't ever want to see mark the market. I just think it's like putting a rule on yourself in a football game. It's like, all right, you're not allowed to tackle the quarterback. Okay. But the other side can still do whatever they want. You just put an artificial rule on yourself that's going to increase your likelihood of losing. And I just don't know why people do it. I guess there's some good reasons. Somebody says, yes, mark to market is stupid. That's a legal term.
And this $3,000 limit, I think, has been around since the 60s.
They never indexed it for inflation. No. So it's been $3,000. I remember that year, by the way, the Qualcomm, I remember that was 1999, if I'm not mistaken. It was 99 or 2000.
The 2018 winners, I think, was Theranos, the drug therapeutic company that
just shot.
Their technology didn't work at all.
Oops. Yeah. Yeah, somebody says if your accountant tells you to mark to market, fire. Not like, again, just it's because they want to take the losses.
Depends on how good you are.
Yeah. And I noticed on the 1099B to do the mark to market on futures, you could do that too. Futures are taxed really well, though. Like, why would, like, that's 60-40, 60 yeah, long term capital gains, 40.
Right.
Yeah. I'm currently buying properties in Arkansas with an LLC. Should I register as a foreign entity? Are there better tax incentives by doing so? Tax-wise, not necessarily. You may be required if you're buying properties and renting them, and you're renting them in the name of the LLC, then you should be registering it. But a lawyer that I respect once said, it's better to ask for forgiveness than permission. If it's going to be really expensive, then you just kind of hang it out there. And if you ever do get sued or something, then you just register it after the fact and say sorry. There's usually a cure period. Like I remember the last time I dealt with this in any real setting was in California, was a 2-year cure. What you're trying to do is if it's going to be prohibitively expensive to be there, then you keep it out. The other way you do it is not to own it in the LLC directly. You use a land trust and then have the LLC be out of state. So if you're in Arkansas and it's not an Arkansas LLC, let's say that it's a Wyoming LLC or something along those lines, then you may not want to have to register. It might be easier just to do a land trust. Unless it's really cheap. In Arkansas, probably isn't super expensive. Do you know off the top of your head?
I don't know off the top of my head what it is.
So anyway, somebody says, hey, the webinar for short-term rentals, Patty, if you have that, it sounds like a whole bunch of people. What we'll do is we'll put it in the follow-up email. Just remember to do that. It is kind of a hot topic because a lot of people are doing the Airbnb, VRBO, and home away. And you just want to make sure that you're doing it right. There's some asset protection reasons to also. There have been fatalities on those properties. And you want to make sure you have the right type of insurance since your normal insurance will not cover it. Finish off on that. This one with the Arkansas, there's really no tax benefits to doing so. Other than if you have a management company, and I say your management company, you could pull cash that would have ordinarily hit your return and put it into a corp. I have a C corporation. Can I deduct long-term care premiums as an expense? So this is actually pretty easy. The answer is yes. Can I deduct long-term care premiums? Yes. The issue is, how many employees do you have? If it's just you, then you can reimburse 100% of your medical, dental, vision, and long-term care. As an individual, if you called up the IRS and say, can I deduct long-term care? They're going to say, sure. But you have to exceed 10% of your adjusted gross income. And then there's a monetary limit. I think it's depending on
and
how
the,
old
and
you are.
The younger you are, the more or the lower that limit is.
Mm-hmm. Somebody says, can you write off a healthcare cost? Wife is a realtor and I am a Social Security benefiter. So yeah, you still can write off healthcare. If your wife's a realtor, then the issue is going to be what portion is deductible versus what portion is you're going to have to pay tax on. So if she's a realtor, more likely than not, she's going to be an S corp. She's going to be required to be a pass through. And then if you cover your healthcare costs, it's considered wages, but you can write off the insurance premium on page one of your 1040. So all that means in English is that you can write off the premiums. You wouldn't be able to write off the co-pays and deductibles. If you want to be able to do that, you need a C corp in the mix. And you can still have a C corp that manages the S corp. Actually, what I like to see it is it hires all the people and does all the marketing. And then you have a little bit left over at the end of the year coming through that S corp. And you pay yourself a salary out of the S corp. And the C corp usually zeros out, or, you know, if it has a lot of extra income, it's going to pay 21% on it.
And we want this S corp not only to be reimbursing for health insurance and medical expenses, we also want them reimbursing you for your Medicare and Medicaid.
Anything that comes out of your pocket.
So even though it's coming out of your Social Security check, the corporation can still reimburse you. And that gets included on that self-employed health insurance deduction.
So I'm not really good on the Medicaid. So you're talking Medicaid?
Like the Medicare that's on
Social Security.
Social Security.
And you're paying it. It's after tax.
But the S corporation has to reimburse you for it.
Yeah. But and if the S corp did it and you're greater than 2% shareholder, or your wife is, then that's income to you. But if it's a C corp, it can reimburse.
Correct.
All right. I want to make sure brokers won't pay her as a S or a C corp. See, Mr. Ron, this is why you come to us. The broker, and this probably is Texas or something. What state are you in, if you could shoot me? There's a workaround, New Jersey. All right. So New Jersey says broker can't pay a entity. Usually that's what they're doing, and they want the individual license. But since we're dealing with the IRS, they don't really care about New Jersey. So what you do is you have to have two pieces of paper. You have to have an employment agreement between your wife and her S corp, and you have to send a letter to your broker saying, hey, I know you're going to pay my wife, or you wouldn't say my wife, but you say, I know I'm going to pay, you're going to pay, I'm just going to use the name Mary. So I know I'm going to pay Mary. I know you're going to pay Mary individually, but she works exclusively for this S corporation. And that's where we're going to apply it. Now the IRS will allow you to treat that money as though it was received by the S corp. That's the way to do it. There's actually a decision on it. So I could give you those documents, no problem. Just make sure you're a platinum client. It's a whopping $35 a month.
And there's actually several industries that this applies to. Real estate brokers,
yep.
Security brokers.
Brokers, anybody that's doing it. And again, we can get it in there. I can show you how to do it. But there's a right and a wrong way. And so what you look at are the tax court cases, and you look at the way the IRS treats it. The tax court, I think it's a Fleischman decision, if I'm not mistaken. I think I've been wrong tonight before. Says Jeff. No, just kidding. But I believe that's the case. And again, what you do is they said, hey, what you have to do, and actually that was a case where it was a securities broker, and he never sent the letter to the brokerage house. He never said, hey, by the way, I'm working exclusively for my S corp. He just said, hey, I'm just going to put it in there, and you can't assign income. So there's a way to do it. Can the C corp reimburse my Medicare for my wife and I paid through W-2 wages?
Yeah, absolutely.
Is that Medicare?
That's Medicare on the Social Security. It's Medicaid, right. Is the state issued.
Right. So Medicare that you're taking out of a W-2, you can't reimburse, I don't think.
Medicare. Yeah, okay. Yeah, so when I'm saying Medicare, I'm talking about the deduction that's reported by Social Security.
Right. So we're talking about Medicare. So when you're talking about Medicare withholding, no, you can't reimburse yourself. Can my C corp reimburse my out-of-pocket health insurance premium costs for insurance through my employer? Yes. In fact, if it's out-of-pocket, meaning that you, here's the example. At Anderson, we pay for the employee. We have a really good benefits plan. Let's say it's $500-$600 a month. But if you want to add your family, you pay that portion. It's still on our plan, and it's taken out of your paycheck. So we pay for the employee, and the employee says, hey, I have two kids and a spouse, and it's now $1,000. So you take the so that gets taken out of their paycheck. So they still have the really great insurance, but they paid after tax $500 a month. You can reimburse that. Yeah. And that's exactly what you do. Plus, you can reimburse if it's through a C corp. You can reimburse. This is important. You can't do it through an S. You have to do it through a C where you're going to actually get the tax benefit. You can reimburse co-pays and deductibles, non-covered procedures, things that aren't covered. And what's the weirdest one you've seen recently? You had a piano guy, spa, pools. We've seen all sorts of funky stuff.
Yeah. The key being that your doctor has to prescribe it.
Doctor prescribes it. One of my favorite was, it was a child that had eye-hand coordination issues, developmental disabilities that they said, hey, we can fix. But the treatment that the doctor recommended was piano lessons.
Treatment we saw in Kentucky was horses. For people with muscular problems.
Yep, that's coming on more and more, actually, for especially for veterans. We're seeing a lot of the dogs. And by the way, we have a bunch of nonprofits that we work with, and one of them that's just amazing is when you're providing service animals for veterans, it virtually reduces the suicide rate to zero. In fact, the dogs are actually attuned to when somebody is depressed. It'll come bug them. Because there's so many little things that are going on after you come out of that situation. And I just think that's amazing. So all that stuff may not be covered by insurance. They may say no, but anything out of pocket you can cover. So, yep. So some of you guys are there. Horses are awesome for the kids too. Absolutely. What is the service dog charity? I have to look up the name. You know that? If you will email me, I'll put you in touch. They were out of Arizona. And service animals cost about $50,000 to train, and they were getting them done for about $5,000 with all their volunteers and everything else. So I'll get you that information. I just was having a little rapping with the guy when I was in Phoenix about 2 weeks ago. All right, let's keep going. What's the rule for claiming meal and entertainment? Is it always 50%? For example, if I take my real estate broker to lunch. Again, we have to change this.
I was waiting for you to do that.
I'm just going to put CPA. So you got to take your CPA to lunch. All right. See, for Jeff, because somebody's got to feed him. All right. What's the rule for claiming meal and entertainment? Here's the first one. There's none of this. There's no more entertainment. The Tax Cut and Jobs Act did away with entertainment. It no longer exists. You cannot write it off ever. It's out of the code. For claiming meal, it's not always 50%. It's 50% if you're taking your CPA or your broker out to lunch. But if you have a group of CPAs, let's say you're doing a continuing education or you're selling a product, you're doing a presentation, then it's 100%. Or if you do a holiday party for your office or your corporation, then it's 100%. You can do one of those here. So it's like, thank you, IRS. Actually, it's Congress. Thank you, Congress.
Yeah, they were actually going to restrict it even more than that, but they gave back some of the issue of the different deductions.
This is interesting. Somebody says, I'm just starting to have rental properties in LLC cash flow managed by a C corp, but I'm afraid to become insolvent if I reimburse my medical expenses. Don't worry about becoming insolvent through your corporation. The corporation just takes those losses and carries them forward. So it doesn't hurt you. In fact, if you do take the expense and you create a loss on your C corp, and it just never is making money and you dissolve it, you can actually take those losses individually up to $50,000, $100,000 married filing jointly. 280A is 100%. Yep. Oh, yeah, absolutely, Richard. If you're talking about if you did a holiday party with the 280A, then it's 100%. Or if you're doing take 280A and you're using your house to do presentations, a lot of people do that, especially in home businesses. For example, I have awesome clients. Some do makeup, some do health products, and you have it in your home and you order up food, it's 100% deductible.
Yeah. You might have an open house for a rental property or for a flip. That's 100% deductible.
Open house. Yep. Perfect. If you're doing an open house for your real estate, that's great too. What's this? Can I write off travel? Somebody says, I trade stock, have family members who trade stock. You meet and discuss trading strategies when I go to visit him. Can I write off my travel and meal expense when I go? Absolutely. If that's your primary reason, more than 50%. You just have to be careful. There's lots of fun stuff that you can do to make sure that it's covered. And the IRS, by the way, cannot tell you to go someplace that's more convenient. If it's in the North American region, it doesn't matter whether, if you live in New York, it's the same as if you go to right down, like next door versus if you go to Seattle. IRS can't tell you to go what's closer. All right. Do I need to pay taxes for my new corporation if I've not generated any income yet? So this is a trick one. You do not have to pay taxes if you don't make any income, but you have to file a tax return. So you do not need to pay taxes. So this is the trick. The answer is no, but file your 1120 if it's a corp or 1120S. And one of the first things we want to do is we want to capture all our startup expenses on that first year return, even if you are whatever it is, even if you lost money, you just right. want to capture it in your first year. All right, fun stuff. We've gone way over. I'm just going to throw this back up at you. It's two for Tuesday, which means we're giving you those two offers. Love that. So I hope you guys
can't believe take we're going two of these.
Two of those. TaxWise business, TaxWise workshop, and Bulletproof. One of the reasons that we do this and educate is because you become awesome clients. And I don't like clients that leave. I like clients that stay. And the smarter you are and the more educated you are, the better you are as clients, which is awesome. And if you have questions, please do Tax Tuesday at Anderson Advisors or visit us at AndersonAdvisors.com. Few other little questions. So there's a lot of thank yous. Thank you. How about a meal where a lender makes proposal to potential borrower or note? You could write that off 50%. Just remember, when you write things off, if you write it off on your individual return, it's at your tax bracket, that 50%, that is not deductible. If you do it at the corporate level, it's the max, it's a flat 21%. So be smart about who's reimbursing. Can the expense of an LLC, C Corp, and S Corp that do not make much money offset the taxes for W-2? Yes. Of course they can. And it depends on the business. But that's a lot of what we're looking at. In fact, if you're a real estate investor, it gets really cool. Literally today, I was sitting there having lunch with another cost segregation company. It's an accounting firm that does cost segregation where we rapidly depreciate real estate. And the average amount that they were getting on residential real estate is about 30% of the improvement value in year one. What that means is they're creating big, fat, huge deductions. If you have a house that's worth 300 grand, they're getting somewhere around $100,000 of first year deduction. And if your brain just popped, well, that's because there's all sorts of little nuances to these things. And if we have somebody, if somebody's a real estate professional, either spouse, then we take that personally. So there's some great things you can do. Absolutely. Anyway, that is so much fun. You can always contact us. If you want to have a free consult, by all means, do the two for Tuesday special. And you will do a full blueprint for you. We're going to save you some money. You know what? If you don't like it, I'll give you your money back. But I've never had a single person in 20-something years who came through and didn't say, dang, I didn't know that. We're going to get you on something. It's just how it is. Jeff and I sit here and play this game. We've been doing this. He's 29 years. And I sit here and I've been doing this for 3 months. Kidding. I'm a lot younger than Jeff. I just graduated again. But we still find stuff all the time to look at and research. There's nobody that knows it all. And so it's good to have a team. Is the full blueprint included in the Platinum membership? Absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, we do through a Platinum is five steps. It's risk reduction formula. We do the blueprint. We do a tax analysis called the Keep More. We're looking for Keep More solutions. How you keep more of your money. We look at your compliance to make sure that, you know, what's due when. And then we do advanced strategy analyzers every year where we're looking at it saying, are there any things that we can do that are going to save you even more big chunks of money? And so it's awesome. If you've already purchased the TaxWise, is Bulletproof available for you, Kimberly? Absolutely. You just tell you tell Patty. Yeah, we'll make it work for you because it's two for Tuesday. Jeff, anything else you want
to
add?
No. Answer to a previous question, if your accountant says they know it all, run.
Yeah.
They don't.
I always say
you're too stupid to know that they don't.
You treat them like a bear. You throw scat in their face.
Oh,
that's what an Alaskan told me. He says you throw fresh scat right in their face. And if you don't know what scat is, I'm not going to tell you. But then you say, well, where do you get the fresh scat? I said, don't worry. If you run into a bear in the woods, there will be fresh scat. I said, will it save you? No. They're going to still eat you. At least you have a good story. You know, hey, there's a bear. You ate a hiker. Looks like the hiker pissed off the bear by throwing scat in his face. That's what's going to happen. Anyway, we've gone too long. You guys have a good one. We will see you. We will see you next time. Hey, Mr. Run, how much does it cost? Do the Bulletproof. That'll get you in the door. $197. We'll get you started. All right, guys. Twas fun. We will see you next time.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. Show notes for links to everything mentioned in this episode can be found on our website at AndersonAdvisors.com/podcast. Be sure you subscribe to our podcast, and if you are already a subscriber, please provide us a review of what you thought of this episode.